Oh, goodbye and go away, grunted the dwarves, angry and afraid at losing him. Now began the most dangerous part of all the journey. Each one shouldered his heavy pack and waterskin and turned from the light that lay on the lands outside and plunged into the forest. They walked in single file. The entrance to the path was like a sort of arch leading into a gloomy tunnel. There were queer noises, grunts, scufflings, and hurryings in the undergrowth. The nastiest things they saw were the cobwebs. Dark, thick cobwebs stretched from tree to tree. Before long, they grew to hate the forest as heartily as they had hated the tunnels of the goblins. But they had to go on and on. The nights were the worst. It became pitch dark. Bilbo tried flapping his hand in front of his nose, but he could not see it at all. Well, perhaps it is not true to say that they could see nothing. They could see eyes. They slept all closely huddled together and took it in turns to watch. When it was Bilbo's turn, he would see gleams in the darkness round them, and sometimes pairs of yellow or red or green eyes would stare at him from a little distance and then slowly fade and disappear. At times they heard disquieting laughter. Sometimes there was singing in the distance too. The laughter was the laughter of fair voices, not of goblins, and the singing was beautiful but eerie and strange. And so they hurried on. Bilbo was in deep thoughts of bacon and eggs and toast and butter when he felt something touch him. Something like a strong, sticky string was against his left hand, and when he tried to move, he found that his legs were trapped. The great spider, who had been tying him up while he dozed, came from behind him. He could only see the thing's eyes, but he could feel its hairy legs as it struggled to wind its abominable threads round and round him. Bilbo attacked it before it could disappear and stuck it with his sword right in the eyes. It went mad and leapt and danced and flung out its legs in horrible jerks until he killed it with another stroke and then fell down and remembered no more. The dim grey light of the forest day was about him when he came to his senses. The spider lay dead beside him, and his sword blade was stained black. Somehow the killing of the giant spider, all alone, by himself, in the dark, without the help of the wizard or the dwarves or of anyone else, made a great difference to Mr. Baggins. He felt a different person, and much fiercer and bolder, in spite of an empty stomach. He wiped his sword on the grass and put it back into its sheath. "I will give you a name," he said to it. "I shall call you Sting." The forest was grim and silent, but he felt it was unsafe to shout, and stood a long while wondering in what direction the path lay, and in what direction he should go first to look for the dwarves. Hobbits are clever at quietness, especially in woods. Also, Bilbo had slipped on his ring before he started. That is why the spiders neither saw nor heard him coming. He noticed a black shadow ahead of him, blacker even than the forest, like a patch of midnight that had never been cleared away. He crept nearer and saw spider webs, one tangled with another. And there they were, spiders, huge and horrible, sitting in the branches above him. And ring or no ring, he trembled with fear lest they should discover him. He realized that these loathsome creatures were speaking to one another. "What nasty thick skins they have, to be sure, but I'll wager there is good juice inside. Aye, they'll make fine eating when they've hung a bit," said another. "Don't hang 'em too long," said a third. "They're not as fat as they might be. Been feeding none too well of late, I should guess."
"Kill 'em, I say," hissed a fourth. "Kill 'em now and hang 'em dead for a while."
Bilbo was horrified to see one of the fat spiders run along a rope till it came to a dozen bundles hanging in a row from a high branch, and dangling in the shadows, a dwarvish foot sticking out of the bottom of one of the bundles. He had to do something. He could not get up at the brutes, but he was a pretty fair shot with a stone, and it did not take him long to find a nice, smooth, egg-shaped one that fitted his hand cosily. While he was picking up stones, the spider had reached Bomba, and soon he would have been dead. At that moment, Bilbo threw. The stone struck the spider plunk on the head, and it dropped senseless off the tree, flop, to the ground. Whack! Dead. He started to lead the furious spiders further and further away from the dwarves, making them curious, excited, and angry all at once. Dancing among the trees, he began to sing a song to infuriate them and bring them all after him, and also to let the dwarves hear his voice. Old fat spider spinning in a tree, old fat spider can't see me. Addercop, addercop, won't you stop? Stop your spinning and look for me. Old Tom Noddy, old big body, old Tom Noddy can't spy me. Addercop, addercop, you'll never catch me up your tree. All the spiders in the place came after him. They were frightfully angry. Quite apart from the stones, no spider has ever liked being called Attercop. And Tom Noddy is, of course, insulting to anybody. They followed him into the forest until he had gone as far as he dared. Then, quieter than a mouse, he stole back. "Now to get them out of those bundles," he said. He managed, by leaning over, to cut most of the strong, sticky threads, and then, sure enough, with a kick and a struggle, most of Feely emerged. In this way, he rescued Keely, Bifor, Bofor, Dory, and Nori. While this was going on, the other dwarves were working at the rest of the captives and cutting at the threads with their knives. Soon all would be free. But then what? The spiders were coming back, and there looked like being a horrible battle. It looked pretty hopeless. Then the battle began. Some of the dwarves had knives, some had sticks, and all of them could get at stones, and Bilbo had his elvish dagger. Again and again the spiders were beaten off, and many of them were killed. But it could not go on for long. Bilbo was nearly tired out. Already the spiders were beginning to weave their webs all round them again, from tree to tree. In the end, Bilbo could think of no plan except to let the dwarves into the secret of his ring. "I am going to disappear," he said. "I shall try to draw the spiders off. You keep together and make in the opposite direction. To the left there, that is more or less the way towards the place where we last saw the elf fires." He suddenly slipped on his ring, and to the great astonishment of the dwarves, he vanished. Soon there came the sound of "Lazy Lob" and "Attercop" from among the trees away on the right. That upset the spiders greatly, and some went off in the direction of the voice. The dwarves huddled together in a knot, and sending a shower of stones, they drove at the spiders on the left and burst through the ring. Away behind them now, the shouting and singing suddenly stopped. Things were looking very bad again, when suddenly Bilbo reappeared and charged into the astonished spiders unexpectedly from the side. "Go on, go on," he shouted. "I will do the stinging." The spiders swelled with rage and spluttered and frothed and hissed out horrible curses. But they had become mortally afraid of sting and dared not come too near. But just when Bilbo felt that he could not lift his hand for a single stroke more, the spiders suddenly gave it up and went back to their dark colony. The dwarves had come to the edge of the ring where elf fires had been. It seemed that some good magic lingered in such spots which the spiders did not like. There they lay, puffing and panting. But very soon they began to ask questions. Balin in particular insisted on having the Gollum story, riddles and all, told all over again, with the ring in its proper place. The light was failing as other questions were asked. Where were they, and where was their path, and where was there any food, and what were they going to do next? All of a sudden, Dwaylin opened an eye and looked round at them. "Where is Thorin?" he asked. It was a terrible shock. There were only 13 of them, 12 dwarves and the hobbit. Where indeed was Thorin? They wondered what evil fate had befallen him, magic or dark monsters. Well, Thorin had been caught much faster than they had. He fell like a stone enchanted. Wood elves had captured him. In the wide world, the wood elves lingered in the twilight of our sun and moon. And in a great cave, some miles within the edge of Mirkwood on its eastern side, there lived at this time their greatest king. Before his huge doors of stone, a river ran out of the heights of the forest. The king's cave was his palace, the strong place of his treasure, and the fortress of his people against their enemies. It was also the dungeon of his prisoners. So to the cave they dragged Thorin, not too gently, for they did not love dwarves and thought he was an enemy. In ancient days, they had had wars with some of the dwarves, whom they accused of stealing their treasure. Thorin was angry at their treatment of him, and when they took their spell off him, he was determined that no word of gold or jewel should be dragged out of him. The king looked sternly on Thorin when he was brought before him, and asked him many questions. But Thorin would only say that he was starving. "Very well," said the king. "Take him away and keep him safe until he feels inclined to tell the truth, even if he waits 100 years. There in the king's dungeon, poor Thorin lay, and after he had got over his thankfulness for bread and meat and water, he began to wonder what had become of his unfortunate friends.